Begin the current daven sentence, but Metzia daf lamed hei. Begin in the second line down for the time of the yamin, where the Gemara continues the discussion from the previous daf. That is, Rav Huna had said halacha in regards to the halacha of our Mishnah. Our Mishnah said that if a shomer chinam loses something, so he's exempt, halachically he could just take an oath that he wasn't shaleich b'yad, he didn't misappropriate it, use it for his own personal needs, he wasn't negligent, and then he's exempt. But if he decides that he's going to pay, and he's not going to exempt himself with the Shavuah. So the halacha that our Mishnah told us, a chiddush, is that then if they ultimately find the gun, the keva goes to the shomer. And that's what we discussed in the previous daf, how that happens. Now, however, if Huna qualified and he said, but he doesn't get totally off the hook of making a Shavuah. He has to make a Shavuah that she'ein b'rishusai, that he doesn't have it in his domain. What's the reason? Because maybe the fact that he's compensating the owner is not because it got lost and he's actually being kind. It's actually because he wanted it. He really got used to this thing that he was caught watching. He liked it around his house. And then he says, oh, it was stolen here. Here's the money. He pays him up for it. But really, he has it. So he has to swear for us that it's not b'rishusai. That was Rav Huna's halacha, qualifying the halacha of our Mishnah. And that the Gemara asked from a Mishnah Masechta Shavuos. And ultimately, the way the Gemara described the case was one of the cases in the Mishnah Masechta Shavuos says if a lender had collateral, a mashkin, that he lost the collateral. So he told the borrower, he says, look, I lend you a sella. Now, the collateral was only worth half that amount, a shekel. So you owe me another shekel, which is a half a sella. And the borrower says, no, it's not true. You lent me a sella, and the mashkin was worth not just half of the sella, it was actually worth three quarters. Where a sella is 4 dinarin, it's actually worth 3 dinarin. So on that says the Mishnah, so then he's chayav a shvu the loiva, because he's what's called maidim miktas. The lender is essentially claiming a half a sella because he really lent him a whole sella. But the collateral that he had was worth half. He lost that, so that takes away half. So he's claiming him the other half of the sella, which are 2 dinarim, and now he's admitting to 1 dinar because he's admitting 3 dinarim, which 2 are already taken care of by the mashkin, which the lender lost. So he's admitting 1 out of the 2. That's moedim miktas hischayav v'shvuah. And that was what the Mishnah there said, that we actually flip around the shvuah. Although the loiv is chayav in the shvuah, we make the malva take the shvuah. What's the reason? Because we were concerned that the malva has a plot. He has a scheme. What's his scheme? He says, I'm gonna unmask this guy. I'm gonna show the world he's a liar. He's never gonna be able to sign on the document. He's not gonna be able to be a witness. Not gonna be able to take oaths. How so? Good. I'm taking him to court. We'll have this exactly how this agreement happens at the case of the Mishnah Masechta Shavuos. He's gonna say that it was worth 3 dinarim. I'm gonna say it was worth only 2 dinarim. And then I'm gonna pull out the mashkin. I really still have it. And I'm going to show the world that he's a liar, because everyone can see clearly that it's only worth a shekel, not 3 dinar. So because of that concern that he might do that, we say that instead of the leiva making the shvuah, we have the malva take the shvuah. The one that the bekadin is by, he's the one that takes the shvuah. That was the halacha of the Mishnah. That the Gemara's question was, if you hold the Rav Huna's halacha, that is shomer, which is what the malva is. He's watching that mashkin, that collateral. Even when he has to pay back money, which he is, he's taking off half the loan, which is how much he was claiming, how much the collateral was worth, he first has to swear that it's not b'rishusai. So then why is that Mishnah Masechta Shavuos concern? That maybe he's going to pull it out and therefore mock and passel that leiva by showing he's a liar. And that's why we make him swear, not the leiva swear, so that he can't catch him on a lie in his oath. What do you mean? It's not possible for that to happen. Because since according to Rav Huna, the malva has to first swear that's not b'rishusai, how could he then come later and pull it out, and therefore we have to make the malva swear instead of leiva, if that can't happen, because he already swore that he doesn't have it. That was the Gemara's question on Rav Huna. On that, our Gemara says 4 different approaches. Amar Rava, he says, very simply, shesh edim shenisrafa. There were witnesses that this collateral got burnt. And that's why the story happened, that now, okay, so you're right, the collateral that I had is gone, but you still owe me, says the lender, the other half. Now, since it got burnt up, so there's no necessity, and hence he doesn't make a shvuah, because he already brought witnesses that it was burnt. The whole purpose would be that maybe he's making it up and really wants to hold on to the collateral, just wants to pay him up for it, can't have that, he already brought witnesses that it got burnt. That's how Rav explains it, so therefore there's no shvuah, she'in the b'shusa. Now, the Gemara says, ihachi, but if that's the case, so we don't have Rav Huna's application over there to say a shvuah shein b'shusai, but mehecha maisla. Then how do we understand the Mishnah Masechta Shavuos in the first place? The whole concern of the Mishnah over there was saying that you make the malva swear instead of the leiva, because maybe the malva is going to pull it out and passel the leiva by showing he's a liar. How could he? It's burnt. We have witnesses saying that they're burnt. So Elam Arizah, rather Arizah, says a different approach. similar to Rava's approach that there's no case of Rav Huna over here where he's going to make a shvur that it's Eina B'shusai, because Sheyesh Eidim, there are witnesses, not that it got burned, but rather Shenignev, that it got stolen. So therefore, it's not impossible for it to come out. But the Gemara asks, but Seif Seif Mechamaisla, but again, where is he bringing it from? He's saying he doesn't have to make a shvur Sheyesh B'shusai, because we have witnesses that say that it was stolen. But if it was stolen, then why do we make the malva make the shvua and not the loiva? Because we're scared he might bring it out. How's he going to bring it out if he doesn't have it? If we have witnesses that say it was stolen. So the Gemara answers the Taruch Umaisila. Because he might go and he's going to say, I'm going to show this guy it was possible. Even though it was stolen, he's going to go after and figure out who is in his house at that date that he lost it. He's going to find the ganim and he's going to pass the loiva. So because of that concern that he might go ahead and find the thief just to get this guy, I mean, to show the world he's a liar and paslim, that's why we go ahead and we have the malva take the shvur and not the leiva. No, but then the Gemara asks, Ihachi, but if that's the case, that the malva really doesn't have it, no one has the bekadim, there's actually some ganav that has it, so then, kimishtabeya malva, then why isn't the concern the other way too? As in the other cases of the Mishnah, or even in this case when the malva takes the oath, then to the contrary, then the borrower is going to go ahead and he's going to bring it, he's going to find out who stole it, and he's going to pass the malva. So why do we say, what is it better than the malva swearing than the leiva swearing? Meaning to say that, okay, so then, because or else, if the leiva swears, the malva might get the mashkin and show he's a liar, then what does it help when the malva swears? The leiva might go ahead and show that he's a liar, and we don't want to pass the Yisrael. Why is it any better? So I think Gemara says no. Bishlem malva by the lender, Yodaman Ka'ayel V'Nafik Bebeise, who is having the mashkin when it was stolen? The malva, the lender, he had as collateral. So he knows who came in and out of his house. So he could go ahead and do his due diligence and end up finding out, so who ultimately was it that stole from his house? He has at least a lead to go with. So therefore, we're concerned more for the leiva, because the malva might actually find out, and he'll do that just to be able to unmask the leiva as a liar. But the borrower, does he know who comes in and out of the lender's house? He has no clue. He doesn't know who are his friends that come into his house. And therefore, there's no concern for when the lender's swearing, that then the loiva might go ahead and, I'll get it just to show he's a liar and make him possible. There's no such concern, again, because since there's Edim Shenigneva, he's not going to really end up getting it because he doesn't know who it is to have detectives working on it and find out who was it that stole. So again, similar to Rava's approach, but Rava's approach is unfathomable because of if it was burnt, then he's not going to bring it out. Rather, he says that it was stolen. So again, so you don't have the problem about Rapun's halacha. You're right, if he swore, then he's not going to pull it out. That if he swore, he doesn't have it. It's not that. There's witnesses. So he never swore that because there's no need to swear because the witness already said he doesn't have it. And therefore, there might be this concern that he might come and find the ganav and passel the leiva. That's where the malva makes this for. Now the Gemara brings two different interpretations that are actually saying that no, it's even talking about when he, because we hold the Rav Huna's halacha, that he made a shvur she'ein b'shusai. So then the question was, if he already made a shvur, he already swore he doesn't have it, so how could you say that he has to swear the malva, not the leiva, because the malva might pull it out and show that this guy's lying, but he already swore that he doesn't have it. So that Abai Amai says, no, gzeres shemiyitin v'yaymaloi, we're still concerned that maybe the lender is going to claim and tell to the borrower, he's going to say, I found it after I swore. In other words, a person usually swears falsely. A person swears that he doesn't have it. He's not going to go ahead and then take it out because then it's going to unmask him as a liar. So he's going to say, no, when I swore, I really thought I didn't have it anymore. Then I found it. But really, it's all part of his scheme to passel that leiva, and that's why we have the malva swear and not the leiva. Even though we have Rav Huna's halacha that already swore that he doesn't have it, still, that might be part of his game to say, oh, no, I didn't swear falsely. When I swore, I didn't know that I had it, and I found it. So we're concerned even for that. That's why it doesn't contradict Rav Huna's halacha. Rav Ashema gives a different interpretation, but also that agreeing to Rav Huna's halacha and that the guy had already sworn that it's not b'shusai, Rav Ashem, he explains, Zen Nishba b'Zen Nishba. This one and this one, the lender and the borrower, they swear. What's the understanding? Zen Nishba she'in b'shusai. The lender swears, like was Rav Huna's halacha, that it's not in his domain. He doesn't have the collateral. It was lost, it was stolen. V'zeh, and the borrower swears, Nishba kama hayishava. He swears how much it was worth. V'achakam, and this is what the Mishnah Masechet Shavuot was saying, not the way we had read it up until now. We had read that Mishnah Masechet Shavuot is that who's the one that takes the oath? And we said it was the one that has the Bekadim, meaning the Malva he swears and not the borrower. And that says Rav Ashi, no. What the Mishnah is saying is, Minish Batchila, who is the first one to swear? And that's what the Mishnah was saying, the one that has the Bekadim, meaning the Malva Nish Batchila. First, the lender swears first, which is really Rav Huna's halacha, that it's not Bishtrusa, that it doesn't have it. The reason why he swears first is Shema Yish Bazeh, because maybe the borrower is going to swear, and he is going to ultimately swear. But if we wouldn't have the lender swear first, maybe the borrower would swear how much it's worth, which he does. He swears that it's only worth 3 and not half. And then the lender would go ahead and take it out and say, aha, you're a liar. See, I can prove it to you. That's why first he has to swear, no, I don't have it. Because that's actually the only way he can get away with not giving back the collateral. And only then does the leiva swear. So again, it is actually the same as the halacha of Rav Huna. There is the shvua. And actually, that's what the Mishnah is actually saying. When it says that the malva makes the shvua, it doesn't mean he's the only one making the shvua. He first makes the shvua, she'ein b'shusa, and then the leiva actually makes the regular shvua of meidim b'miktzas. Now the Gemara continues asking on this halacha of Rav Huna. Again, which Rav Huna's halacha was that even if you have a shemer that wants to pay for an aveda or gneva that he doesn't have to, that he was watching that pekadin, however, he still has to make a shvua she'ein b'shusa. On that, as Rav Huna bar Tachlifa Mishmei Rava Amar, he says, Reisha de Seifa, which is referring back to that Mishnah Masechta Shavuos we quoted in the previous daf, which there was a Reisha and a Seifa. The first half of that Mishnah was talking about when the lender is claiming the differential, where he's saying, look, I lent you $100, and the collateral was worth 50. So you still, I lost the collateral, but you still owe me 50. And then the borrower was saying either that no, it was the same amount, or yes, it was the collateral was less, but it's more than what you're saying. So he was on the defensive. The Seifa was the borrower was claiming the differential, where he was saying that the loan was only 100, the collateral was 200, now you lost the collateral, you owe me money, and it was the lender on the defensive. So the Reisha of the Seifa, which again the Seifa is regarding when the borrower is claiming from the lender, there we learned that the lender is going to be exempt from the claim of the borrower. Says Rav Huna bar Tachlifa in the name of Rava is to yuftal Rav Huna. That refutes Rav Huna's halacha. Why? Because the Mishnah quotes the following halacha. The borrower tells the lender, Sela hil visani lav. Look, on this collateral, you lent me a Sela. Shtayim hayeshava. Now, and the collateral is worth 2 Sloim. Vahalo oimer loy. And the lender says, no, not true. Ki ela Sela hil visicha lav. I lent you a Sela on that collateral. And Sela hayeshava. The collateral was only worth the same amount. Now that I lost the collateral, fine. We're even, but I don't owe you money. Says the Mishnah Patri is going to be exempt. Because he wasn't made to be mixed. He's totally denying the claim. That's the halacha over there. And that asks Rava Vim Isal Rav Huna. But if you hold the Rav Huna's halacha, that every person that's paying for a collateral, that's paying for a pekadin, that's a shamer, and he's going to pay for it. But first, he has to make a shvua, she'ein b'shusai. Okay, you're chayv, you're going to pay, fine. But you have to first make a shvua that you don't have it. On that, the question is, amiga de mishtabeya malva, she'ein b'shusai. So once he's swearing, and we get him in the position where he's making an oath. Because Rav Huna says, every shamer that even if he's paying, has to first swear that he doesn't have it. So l'shtabeya namei gilgul shvua, then we shall be allowed to make him make other shvuas based on the principle of what's called gilgul shvua, which is the role, the continuity of an oath, which is if there's a claim that wouldn't make a person take an oath, you make him take an oath if he has to make an oath for a different claim that mandates him to take an oath. That's what's the halacha concept of gilgul shvua. He has to swear on both of these ideas now, which is a biblical halacha. Mentioned Masechtas Kedushin of Chav Zayin Mabeis. So he should have to swear kama yeshava. He should have to swear how much it was worth. In other words, the whole halacha of how much it's worth is based on the principle of Maidim Mektis, meaning he's claiming, the borrower is saying it was worth 2 Islam. The lender is saying, no, stop it. I lent you a seller. The collateral was worth the seller. Okay, we're even now. And that asks the Gemara, so why doesn't he make a shvua? You write this no, but Maidim Mektis, but he should have to swear that it was only worth a seller, not 2 Islam, because once he's making the shvua, the Shein B'Shusai, so Gilgul Shvua should be Mechayvim to make a shvua of how much it's worth, not because of Maidim Mektis, but because of Gilgul Shvua. That in Rav Ashi, he says, Amrit l'shmaita kamed Rav Kana. I said over this teaching in front of Rav Kana, which this was the question on Rav Huna. V'amali, and he said to me, what you have to explain to, hey, let it be that this that the Mishnah over there says, that the lender is going to be exempt from making a shvua, b'maminoi, must be talking about where the borrower believes the lender that it's not in his domain. You're right. Rav Huna's halacha is correct. generally he has to make a shvua that is not b'shusay. And you're right. If he was making that shvua, then Gilgal shvua would be mechayiv him to make a shvua how much it's worth, and he would have to make a shvua. So why does the Mishnah and shvua say that he's pater? It's because there is no Gilgal shvua. Why not? Because he's not making the shvua shein b'shusay. Why not? It's because the borrower believes the lender. I don't think that he's lying, that it was stolen from him or lost from him. So he's paying me for that loss of the collateral. He's not making a shvua shein b'shusay. Now, on that, asked the Gemara, but then benemni leva lamava, if the borrower believes the lender that, okay, he's not lying, that it's not in his domain, so why doesn't he believe him nami baha kama hava shabbat? And why doesn't he believe him how much it's worth too? Why is he taking him to court regarding, you're saying it's worth this much, I'm saying it's worth that much? Why not? If he believes him, he's believing him that it's not in his rishos, so why doesn't he believe him how much it's worth? And why is he contending with him? So that says the Gemara, no, because on that the borrower says, not because I don't trust him, but it's lekimle. It's just because the lender is not, he doesn't know how to evaluate bigave regarding the collateral, because he didn't assess its value. I know how much it's worth. I trust him. I just think he's ignorant. I don't think he knows how much it was worth. That's why he's contending with him, taking to court. But it's not an element of trust. Therefore, since he trusts him, he's not making a shvush in a b'shusa. Now that the Gemara asks, but if the borrower believes the lender, then let the lender believe the borrower, the kimli begave. So the borrower definitely knows the value of his object. So why are they in court? Why, if we see the borrower believes the lender, and just he contends with him regarding the value because he thinks he doesn't know, but then let the lender, why is the lender coming to court? Let him believe the borrower, because he definitely knows the value of his collateral, and they trust each other. And that's the Gemara, loy mehemelay. No, the lender does not trust the borrower. So the Gemara says, why? Why is it the way we're describing that Mishnah? That the borrower trusts the lender. And that's why it doesn't make him take a shvush in b'shusay. But then why doesn't the lender trust the borrower? In other words, why is the Tana explaining that this is the case, that one believes one and the other one doesn't believe the other one? Because as we said, the lender, he wouldn't think that the borrower is ignorant regarding the assessment of his value of the collateral. So it must be only because he just doesn't trust him. But why? Why does the lender? Why are we assuming? And why does the Tana set it up like that? That the lender does not trust the borrower, but the borrower does trust the lender, and that's why he doesn't make him take a shvush in the b'shusay. So the Gemara says that's because leiva mekayim be b'malvam. The way the borrower views the lender, based on the pasuk in Mishlei, that says tumas yisharim tanchem. Tumas, from the word of tam, of the wholeness, the shlemus of the yisharim, of the upright, is how Hashem leads them. In other words, what he thinks to himself is, if this lender wasn't a trustworthy and upstanding person, Hashem would not have made him wealthy. From the fact that Tanchim, that Hashem is leading him in wholeness, must be because he's a yasher. I trust the lender because he's a wealthy person. He gave me the loan. But Malva Mekayim Bebelev, in the contrast, the lender does not trust the borrower because he treats him as the end of the pasuk says, V'selav b'gdim yishadim, and that the crookedness of the treacherous ones will plunder what they have. The reason why he has to borrow money is because probably he's untrustworthy. And that's why they view each other in opposite ways. The lender trusts the borrower, trusting the lender, and therefore not making him take a shvush in b'shusay, and that's why there's no gilgul shvua, and the lender not trusting the borrower, and that's why he's taking him to court, contending the value of the collateral, and therefore there's no question on the halacha Rav Huna from this b'raisa, from the Reisha de Seifa of the Mishnah Masechta Shavuos. Nothing more continues with a story relating to this halacha of our Mishnah. Hu gavra de afkid keifei gabi chavre. There was a person that deposited earrings with his friend. So amalei havli keifei. So then they came back to him and says, give me back my earrings. Amalei lo yada nechizvin. He says, I don't know where I put it. So asla kama de Rav Nachman. They came from the Rav Nachman. Amalei, he said to him, kol lo yadano. Anyone says, I don't know where it is, pshiyusahi. That's a negligence. Zil shlim, go ahead and pay the guy up, because although you're a shei mechinam, but still you got to pay up because of negligence. So on that, the Gemara says, lo shilim, he didn't pay. So Azul Rav Nachman agvi la padna minei. So Rav Nachman went, and he collected, since he wasn't paying, he took one of his properties, he took his mansion from him. Now, l'sayf ishtakech kefi. At the end, they found the earrings. It was somewhere in the guy's house. He didn't know where it was, it got lost, but it was there. Now, moreover, v'ayakar. In the interim, the earrings had actually increased in value more than how much the owners were paid. In other words, he took one of his properties. He took something to compensate him for the earrings, but he was taking the value. Now that they found the earrings are actually worth more than how much the guy was paid up. because they went up in value. So Rav Nachman said, Hadri kefe lamarayu. So we give the earrings back to the owner. Vahadra panna lamar, give the mansion, whatever the property was that was taken from, back to the owner, meaning to the shomer. Now, on that Amar Rava says, and this is where it relates back to the halacha that we're discussing of our Mishnah. Rava said, Habiyasivna kamid Rav Nachman. I was sitting in front of Rav Nachman when he was litigating this court case. Upirkana mafkid hava. And we were learning at that time this parak hamafkid of the halachas of shomerim in the third parak of Bab Metzia. Now, the Amrilei says, Rav, and I told him, but we learned in our Mishnah, Shilei Malei Rotz Ali Shava, if you have a shomer that pays and he doesn't want to swear, meaning if he ends up paying. So what does the halacha of the Mishnah say? That he acquires the halacha of kefil. So ask the Rav to Rav Nachman, here also, the guy paid, meaning because they took his mansion, they paid up the owner of the earrings from the shomer's assets. So he should acquire, just like he acquires kefil, he should acquire now whatever the derivatives are of that principle, which now he acquires, just like he gets kefil, he should get now the benefit of the increased value that the earrings went up after he had paid for it, which they did because they took away one of his properties. And says, Rav v'lo hadali. Rav Nachman didn't answer me to that question. It says, Rav v'shapa avad lo hadali. And Rav Nachman did very smart that he didn't respond to me. Because it's not a question. My time, what's the reason? Hasam lo atrachei lebeit dina in the halacha of the Mishnah. What's the reason why he gets the kefil? As we explained in the previous daf. The owner willingly submits the derivatives of the shvach that comes mi'alma, which one of them is kefil, because he didn't have to, he could have gotten away from it, but the shomer willingly goes and pays instead of wiggling his way out of it, so he gives him the kefil. But the part of the parcel is that he doesn't make me go through the drudgery of going through the court, spending money and time. Therefore, they give him the kefil, and then yes, he would get whatever derivatives are off from it from the higher value. Hocha atrach lebeidina. Here, he not only went to court, the court actually said he's guilty, and he didn't even pay. And then the court had to go ahead and take one of his properties. For that, he doesn't get benefit from that, which includes kefil, and includes the higher value of the earrings. And that's why he didn't get the earring value, and therefore they give the earrings back to the owner, and he gets his property back. Now, regarding this story, however, the Gemara asks, Lemer, is that to say, the Savar of Nachman, holds, the Shuma is the term that's used for when there's the valuation of the properties of the debtor, which the courts evaluate to be able to pay up his creditors, that which is what was happened over here, where they took one of his properties to pay up for the earrings that he, I don't know where it is, which is negligence, and therefore he was chayev, that is hadar, that goes back to him if he ends up paying up to his creditor what he owes him, like over here, where they gave him back his property when they found the earrings and gave the earrings back to the person that gave him to watch it. In other words, this is a different concept. So up until now, we were talking about how it relates to the halacha of the Mishnah regarding that he owns it and he gives a gift kefil against the yoker. Here we're asking a different question. It seems like, but what Rav Nachman did was that when he quote, paid him up, he gave him the earrings, so then he got his shuma back. So is that true that he gets it back? Another thing, Mar says, no, it's not a raya, it's not a proof. Because Shani Hasim, you can say there was different. The shuma betos haba. It wasn't even a real shuma evaluation of the debtor's properties to be used in payment because it was actually an error. Because we thought that the earrings were lost. And therefore we went down this property and we took it away, but it wasn't even lost. So he didn't even have even what he had to even pay him because it was always there. We just didn't know because the Kahava cave in Meikara. The earrings were always there in the beginning, even at the time when the evaluations for the properties of the debtor were around. It's just that they didn't know. And had they known at that point in time, then they wouldn't evaluate and assess to repossess his mansion. So that's why it'll go back to him. But a regular shuma of the courts, where they evaluate for someone that doesn't have money at that time, and he's chayiv money, so that, when they take it away, that's like a full-fledged sale. And that, you're right, even if he wants to pay it at that point in time, it doesn't automatically go back to him. Therefore, you could say that maybe shuma is lohadar. In this case, it was hadar because it was all in error. Now, however, Amri Nardari, the Nardari said, Shuma hadar. No, it does go back. But atrei siyar chishata, up until a period of 12 months. If he didn't have money and they took from his property, from his estate, within 12 months, if he gets the funds and he goes and pays back the creditor, then they give him back his properties. Now, v'amameima said, anom Nardah. No, he says, I am from Nardah, from that city in Bavel, because we just quoted from Nardah, who said, he says, I'm from Nardah, with svirli shuma hadar l'olam, and I hold that actually it goes back forever. Meaning, no matter how much, if he ends up getting the funds, he could always get back his properties that were repossessed. And the Gemara says that's the halacha that it always has to go back. And that's Mishum Shnem, it's based on the pasuk in Devarim that says, you should do what's upright and good, meaning that although maybe halachically it is yours as a creditor, you got his property, but what's upright and good is when he finally gets the money to pay you up, you should give him back his property, no matter how long it took for him to get it. Now, continuing on these halachas, the Gemara says, Pshita, it's obvious. Shamu leil bal chayv, if they evaluated the property of the borrower who had no money to pay up, and therefore they evaluated how much it's worth his property to be able to pay up commensurate with how much the debt he owed for his creditor, then va'azal ihu, then that creditor who got that guy's property, he went for shamal balchayv today. He went and had that property evaluated for his own creditor, because the creditor owed money to somebody else. Amrina lay, so we, meaning the borrower, we tell the second creditor, you're no better than the person that you got that shuma from. In other words, from the first creditor, where you got it from him. And in other words, just like if the borrower would come with money and give it back to his creditor, he would have to give it back to him because of a sisa yashabatayb. So too, who you got your money from the first creditor, when the first borrower comes, skipping a step, going to you to get back his property, you also have to give it back because that's where you got your power from, power of attorney, which is from that guy, from the borrower. You have to give it back also because of a sisa yashavatai. That's if it went from the borrower to a creditor to another creditor. However, zavna, if the first creditor didn't give it to his creditor, but rather he sold it to somebody else, meaning the value of that land, or urta, or if it was inherited to someone else, or vihave b'matano, or he gifted it to someone else. And that says the Gemara, vadehani, most definitely these later people, whether they be a consumer or inheritor or someone who's receiving it as a gift, me'ikara adai to da'aranachas. Originally, when they're receiving it from this Baal Chayib, their intention was because they wanted the land, v'lav adai to da'zuzinachas. When they entered the picture, it wasn't for the money. And therefore, they don't have to take money from the borrower. Now, because that stands in contrast to the creditor, a creditor essentially really is owed money. Now, however, when there's no money, then they could collect the land instead of that, which is what Shuma is. But therefore, there it applies v'sisa yashvatev, because we say, look, all you were owed was money. Now, I didn't have money, so you then got the land. But now that there's money, you should go ahead and give me back the land because of a sisa yeshivatev. You didn't come into the picture because of the land. And therefore, even if you're a creditor of a creditor who got it from me, you have to give me back the land. In contrast to these other people, a consumer says, no, what do you mean? I only entered the picture because of the land. You're going to give me money? I don't want money. I wanted the land. Then there's a sisa yeshivatev is not machai of them to give the land back to the original debtor. Another halacha. Shamul ali isha ve'insava. If a woman was owed money by a borrower, and they evaluated the borrower's land for the woman, and then she went and got married. So, as Rashi points out, even if she didn't put that shuma, which was owed to her, which she's collecting the land of that borrower who defaulted on the loan, they took away from his property, gave it to the woman. She didn't put it into the ksuba to be one of the what's called nichsei tzarim barzel, which are the ironclad nechasim, which are acquired to the husband as if he owns it totally, even the actual guf hakarka. Rather, she keeps it for herself, and therefore that's qualified as what's called nichsei meluk, which the principal is owned by her. Just her husband gets the utility of it. He gets what's called the payris, he gets to use it. Even in such a case, which is one case, or the flip side of that case, shamu minad de isha v'insava. Let's say the woman herself owed money, and she didn't have money, but she had assets, and then they qualified and evaluated her land and gave it to her creditor. Then she got married. And then Umeisa, then she died. So says the Gemara regarding both these cases, which are either the Shuma was to her or from her, then Baal, her husband, benichse in these nichse milog of ishtay of his wife, loy keachava, he is qualified like a consumer. In other words, the Chacham, as the Gemara is shortly going to quote, consider the husband like a consumer. Now, because of that, we have the following halachas. We have, first of all, loy meheder, that is, where they had evaluated property of her borrower to her, and they gave her land of the borrower. Then she got married. Then she died, and then her husband inherited her, which, as we say, that in such a case, that shuma does not go back to the borrower. The reason for that is because we consider the husband, like the case we discussed before, when if the creditor goes and sells the land to someone else, we say that that person came for the land because he's a consumer, there they don't have to give it back to the original debtor, to the borrower. So it doesn't go back, again, because we consider him a lekeach, because he's not just an extension of the woman, he's not like a bal chayv of the bal chayv, he's a consumer of the bal chayv, meaning of the woman. And now it's the other way too. We also don't give it back to the husband, meaning, if let's say the woman owed money, and then they took from her land and made it into a shuma, and then she got married, and then she died, and then her husband inherited her, and now he wants to go ahead and pay up that debt to take the land back, which originally hers, he cannot say that I'm an inheritor of hers, which I'm like an extension of her, and just like she would be able to pay it up and get the land back, so could I. No, because the rabbis considered the husband as a lekeach, as a consumer, and the consumer doesn't have any rights to get back land, and they only consider him like a lekeach and not like a yerish. Now, why do we say this? Where do we find this? So says the Gemara, "D'amar Rabbi Yisrael Chanina, like Rabbi Yisrael Chanina said, Be'usha hiskinu." In Usha, which was at one point the Sanhedrin was in Usha, which is the name of a place, which, as the Gemara Rosh Hashanah, Flamen Alpha, Flamen Alpha explains, at the time of the Churban, there were 10 different journeys that they took when they left the Lishkas HaGazes, and one of the stops was in Usha, where the Sanhedrin HaGadol war. So on there, the great court had instituted that her Isha Shemachra B'Nichse Melog, B'Chaye Baila, a woman that sells from one of her Nichse Melog, which is she owns the Guf HaKarka, the husband has the utility, if when she's still married and alive, when her husband's alive, she sells from a Nichse Melog, for meaning what that means to say when she sells it is that, of course, the husband still, he has his rights, which is the utility. As long as she's alive, he's still going to eat the peiros. But the actual land itself is sold to the consumer. For what that means to say is that when she's going to die, that then the lekeach will be able to get it. And that is what they were mesaken in Usha, but that if umesa, if she dies, that actually habal maitzi, the husband could go ahead and actually remove the actual guf hakarka, the principle of the land itself, from the consumer. In other words, as the Gemara in Ksubis Daf Amin Chesem Abayis explains this, that what the Tekana of Usha was, that the actual land itself after she dies, although halachically really should go to the Lekeach, because he never owned the land itself, he was just had the Paris, and that's where Masakin in Usha, that he will get the Gufa Karka, that the Lekeach will not be able to get it. Why? Because obviously what the rabbis considered him, and that was the Tekana that they made him like a Lekeach. So hence, he could tell that later lekeach, because she sold this when she was already married to her husband, the husband could say, I was the first lekeach, I bought a first, I have first rights. Because if we consider the husband like a regular yerish, then just like a yerish, that if his father, let's say, sells his properties when he's still alive, the yerish doesn't get any rights for the yerusha, so too the wife. If the husband was only like a yerish and the wife sold it off, so the husband wouldn't have any rights to go ahead and get it. She already sold it before he was able to yarshin it. Obviously, the tekana of Usha was that they made the husband like a lekeach, and therefore, since they made him like a lekeach, we have these two applications regarding the halacha of Shuma, that they don't return it to him, and neither do they return it from him. Because again, they consider him like a lekeach, so he can't get back from others, because he's not an extension of the woman, he's not a yerish, rather a lekeach. And so too, regarding that they don't return it to him, that is, they don't take it away from him, which is that if she went and got the shuma, he's like a lekeach of her, and therefore, you can't go ahead and say that you want to get it back from the bal chayv, because he's like a lekeach of the isha. The Gemara continues in Amud Beis, and goes back to what we were discussing before regarding shuma. In other words, if let's say the court did not do their process of shuma, which generally happens is when the borrower doesn't want to pay or doesn't have what to pay. So against his will, the courts come and they assess and evaluate his property and then they take it away and give it to the lender. Let's say they didn't have to do that. Let's say he on his own did it. He didn't make the lender have to go to court and put a lien on his property. He went himself. And Agvei Ihu B'chayvai, he went and said, here, I have no money, but take my land for the debt that I owe you. So he went and he said to pay it up for his debt. So now the Gemara says, Pligibar Rav Acha Ravina. So we have a machloikas over here between Rav Acha and Ravina. Chat Amar Hajra. One says, just like the regular case of Shuma, which he has no money, and therefore the court repossesses his property. But then when he ends up getting the money, he could get it back. So too over here, when he gave the property, because he had no money, when he ends up getting money, he could get it back. The other one says, no, he can't get it back. So the Gemara explains the machlekes. Mandam Alohaja, the one that says he cannot get his land back. Savar Haizvinim Aliyah, he holds that this was a regular full-fledged sale. Because the Hamidaita did Nafsha Agve. He gave it willingly. So essentially, he paid it. Like, it was like payment for what was owed. It's like a full-fledged Kenyan, and it's over with. You can't now pay it and get it back. You gave it willingly. Umanda Mahadra Savar, but the one that says, no, he could get it back. Loizvinim Aliyah, no, it's not a full-fledged sale. He wasn't agreeable to give it, and so for once it's given, he can't get it back. Because Vahaida Agve Medaita, this that he gave it on his own, and not letting it go to court, which if it went to court, they would have to take it forcibly, and then he would be able to get it back. The reason why he didn't go to court, he didn't come to the Din Torah, is because he's embarrassed, he didn't want to go to court, and there he is, he has no money, and the court has to, you know, come with the police and repossess his things. That's why he gave it, but really he didn't want it to be done, and therefore he has the same halachic leniency as a shuma to be able to go ahead and pay it up at a later point in time. That's their machlokes. Now the Gemara goes back to the Salacha of Shuma and asks, so let's say regarding where the courts did do a Shuma. The Beis Din came down and they assessed the value and they said, okay, we're going to be taking away your stuff, we're going to be giving it to your debt, to your creditors. So regarding such a case, Ume Emas. So from when is it that it's already considered owned now by the creditor, by the lender, that Ochel Peri, that he could already start consuming produce of that land that we consider it his? Meaning when the borrower gets the money, he'll be able to pay it back and get it back. But now it's considered lenders. From what point in time do we consider it his land? Because really, it always stayed where it always is. When do we now suddenly consider it as his? So there's a few different opinions. Rabbi Amar, he says, Mechimatya Adarchase Liyadi. From when he gets this document called the Adarchase, that is when it's considered his land. Now, that is after 90 days after the court had Paskin the Din, when they decided the verdict, as the Gemara says in Daf Tezvav, that the court write another chasa after 90 days after the verdict, which is a document regarding the assets of the borrower, that wherever they are, that the lender could go ahead and collect from them, and they give him over that document. From when he gets that document, it's considered his land, and then he can start eating the payers. Abayami says, actually, a little bit before that, you don't have to wait till the document comes to his hand. It's because Edov Bechasumov, the witnesses with their signatures, from the day that the document of the Adachasa were signed in the court, even if it didn't come to the hand of the lender, Zachan, like, already they merit, they are doing a Zachan Adam Shleib Lefonim, they merited for him his land, and therefore they could already start eating even if he didn't get it. If he hears that they signed, could right away go down and eat pears from that field. Rav Amma, he gives a different opinion. He says, Mechishlimi Yemeach Razasa. When the days of the announcements finished, only then is it considered his land. So he says, no, even if the Adarchasa, this document, which is after 90 days of the Psak Din, already came to the hand of the lender, but they didn't find yet properties of the borrower until a later point in time. Now, even when they find properties where he could collect from, because now he has the Shtar Adarchasa, you still have to come to court. Because the court now, once he comes to court, he says, okay, I found property of his, and we could go ahead and take it to pay up my debt. The court first has to announce that there's land to be sold. As the Gemara says in Erechin of Chafal from Beis, where if let's say this guy comes and he gets the land because he gave a higher price in the auction for the guy's land more than everyone else, so then after the days of the announcements, then it's considered the bidding is done and he gets it. Whereas the Gemara in Erechin explains how many days they announce it for. Now, up until those days announcements are finished, then it's still considered the payers of the borrower. It's only when those days of announcements, that whether they be, let's say, a period of 30 days that they announced it for, and then when that's done, to say, okay, who's going to buy? Because they're waiting for the highest bid. Then, when that's done, then it's considered the property of the malva. But before that, when it's signed or when he gets the shahar d'chasa, that's not yet considered his land, and it would be considered the payer of the loiva, not of the malva of the creditor. Nothing more continues with the next Mishnah, again continuing the theme of this parak regarding the liabilities and the exemptions of a shomer of one of the four types of watchmen. So the Mishnah says the following case. Hasecher par mechaveret. If someone rents a cow from his friend, and now the renter goes, v'shilacher, he went to the place, they rent out animals, he rented an animal, then he goes and lends it out to his friend. You know, I paid for it, I rented it, but I know you have no money here, I'm lending you this cow. Now, umesa kadarka. And then it died in a very normal way, meaning it just died. So the halacha is, say the Tanakama, yishava ha-seicher. So the borrower swears to the rent, to the rental company, shemesa kadarka. It died in a very normal way, and therefore he's exempt, because a renter is not chayv anayinsin. It's an anayinus. It wasn't stolen, wasn't lost, wasn't through anything that even has any negligence attached to it. It was an anayinus. The animal just died. So he's exempt. He doesn't have to compensate the rental company. Vashayel, now the borrower who borrowed from him, who's chayv anayinsin, which the fact that it died doesn't exempt the borrower, yisham l'seicher. He has to pay to the renter. So the renter turns out on top. He's exempt. He ends up getting a free cow. He doesn't have to pay the one who rented it to him because it's a anayinus. But he lent it to somebody who had died by him, and he has to pay him up, so he gets a cow out of the whole thing. Amr B'Yesi, he disagrees. He says, "Kitzad halah oisus chayra b'parasa shachaver? How exactly can you tell me that a renter is doing business with someone else's cow? How is he making money off something that's not even his cow?" Ela tachzeh par labam, he disagrees. Rather, the cow goes back to the original owner, meaning the shoyl who's chayv an oinsin pays it not to the seicher, but pays it to the original owner. That's how his opinion is. Now, the Gemara asks on this opinion of the Rabban and of the Tanakama. Amli Rav Ida bar Oven Labai. He says, Mechdi, let's see. Seicher b'may kani lahay par. How does, according to the Tanakama, the renter acquire the cow? What makes it his? Bishvua. When he swears to the maskir, to the one who rented it to him, that it died. Oh, okay, so then the maskir says, I can't get anything from you. That's when he's exempt. That's when he acquires the rights. And that's why now when the shoyl pays it up, it goes to him, not to the one who rented it to him. Now on that asks the Gemara, V'neimalei maskele seicher, but let the one who rented it tell the renter, Dal ant v'dal shvas. Forget about you, forget about your oath. I'm going to go straight to the borrower that you lent it to, and I'm going to deal with him. He had my cow, it died by him, he's chayv anayinsin, it's going to go to me. Because if the whole way that the seicher gets it is through a shvua, let the guy rent them say, I don't care about Yeshua, I'm not listening to Yeshua. Because that's going to make you acquire it. I'm just going to go straight to the borrower. So why doesn't he do that? Why did the Rabban say that he loses out and rather goes to the Seicher? Samalei Sabayi said to Rav Ida bar Oven, Mi savet Seicher b'shvuhu de kokanela? Do you think, as you saw in your question, that the renter acquires the animal by the oath that he makes to the guy who rented it to him? No, mishas misahu de kani. The moment the animal dies, that's an oinus. The renter is exempt from Einzim. At that point in time, he acquires the animal, meaning he's totally off the hook with the masker at that point in time. So therefore, he acquires it, and the guy who borrowed it from him has to pay up to him. Ushvua, the oath that he makes to the masker, is kedei lahafes daita shabala bayis. That's only to appease the owner that he shouldn't say, oh, you were negligent, and therefore you're going to be chayiv. So he makes an oath, the Torah is mechayiv an oath. But that's not what's maknit to the seicher. The death, the exemption is what's maknit him. And therefore, he can't just go around them and go to the shayel because you have nothing to do with the shayel. The moment it died, the seicher could say to the masker, see ya, I have nothing to do with you anymore. And therefore it's his, and therefore he could go ahead and collect from the shayel and not the masker. Now, Amr Abzeri says a very interesting halacha based on the halacha of our Mishnah. He says, pa'amim, at times it could turn out Shehabailam, that the owner of the animal, meaning the original guy who rented it to the seicher, to the renter, could be mishalman, could have to pay kama paris l'seicher. He's going to have to pay many cows to the guy who rented it from him. Meaning, for this one cow, according, if one understands the halacha of our Mishnah, some he'll have to pay to the seicher that actually totally give it to the seicher, meaning he has to pay him up an animal. And some of the cows that he gives him will be only to use in the meantime in the rental, but then he'll have to give it back to the original owner. But he has to give him many cows. Says the Gemara, Hechidami, what's this case of Reb Zera? So it's the following case. Agra minei meyu yaimi. Reuven rented a cow from Shimon to do work for a period of 100 days. He's renting, pays him the rental fee for a cow for 100 days. V'hadr shai l'minei tishin yaimi. Now, Shimon goes back to the guy who rented the cow from him and he says to him, look, do me a favor. I know I rented my cow to you. Could I borrow the cow from you for a period of 90 out of the 100 days that you rented it from me? Now, after the 90 days, I'll give it back to you. I know you paid for it. You rented for it. I'll give you the remaining 10 days to finish off the 100, but for the first 90 days, let me borrow the cow from you. And that's what he did. Now, if one would stop right over here, You could apply the halacha of our Mishnah at this point. The Mishnah taught, if someone rents a cow from his friend, and he lends it to someone else during the period of the rental. Now, because as Rashi points out, what's the difference if this other person that the renter lends it to is someone else, or even the original owner who had rented it to him? doesn't make a difference. He's still someone else that he's lending it to. If at this point in time, when the borrower, who is the original owner, if the animal will die at that point in time, so then the seicher would be exempt from the masker by taking a shvuah, because death is an einus, and the seicher is pater. The quote, shayel, the borrower, who's the original owner, would have to pay to the seicher, because he's a borrower, although it's really his cow, but he's borrowing from the seicher. So based on the halacha of the Mishnah, he would actually have to pay a cow to the seicher. That's one part. Let's continue. Hada agrimine taman yin yomi. Now, what ended up happening was, now, Reuven went back to the original guy who rented it to him, who, if you recall, borrowed it then from him for a period of 90 days. He comes back to him and he tells him, look, from those 90 days that you borrowed it from me, I want you to rent it to me for a period of 80 days, and I'll pay you again for it. Because although I know I lent it back to you, I really do need it, so I'm going to borrow it from you. I'm going to rent it from you for 80 days. And that's what he did. Now, essentially, in this situation, Shimon, who's the original owner, is still on some level a shayel, because the reason how he had the cow in the first place was because he borrowed it from the one who rented it from him. So it's as if he's renting it to somebody else. Now, the reason why is because he's getting paid now for a second time for the period of 80 days. Forget about the payment that he got for the period that he rented him for 100 days. And he's getting all the benefit from the cow, which is the halacha what a shoyl has. And even though really he got it from the guy who rented it from him, so he's like a shoyl from him. And therefore, if it would die by Reuven now, meaning he's the renter, Reuven would be pater with a shvua again because of einus, because if it just the animal dies, it's einus. Shimon, even if it would be dying by Reuven, Shimon would have to pay him one cow that he borrowed from him, which he's chayv and einus as a shayel. Moreover, he would have to give him another cow to at least a temporary of 10 days to finish off the 10 days of the 100 days, where because he had borrowed from him only 90. And then he had rented him from 80, but as a shayel, he has to pay him up, first of all, for the fact that he borrowed it from him, which is chayim and einsin. Moreover, there was another 10 days at the end for the 100 that he had to give it back to him for, which he never gave it back to him because it died. So he has to give him, besides one to pay up for the einsin, he has to give him another cow for just a temporary of 10 days to finish off those 100 days. That's that point. And the story continues. Now, but it didn't end over there. He didn't just rent it back from him for another 80 days. V'hadu shayilim and shivin yaymi. Now, then Shimon went back and borrowed it from him again for a period of 70 from the 80 days that he rented it from him, on the condition that he'll give it back to him and that he'll be able to finish off the last 10 days of the 80 days that he rented a second time from him, where, look, let me borrow for 70 days, and the last of the second rental, you'll have the last 10 days of the 80 days. Now, that explains the Gemara. If umeisa b'techi meishalasa, if ultimately that's what happened, the animal died during those 70 days when the original owner who borrowed it twice, it died in his possession. So now the second halacha is the same as the first halacha. Meaning, Reuven, who he's the original renter, he goes and swears that it died in its normal way. And that exempts him. Now Shimon, the quote, the shayel, the original owner who he borrowed it twice, will have to pay four cows to his original renter. Two for keeps, because of the two cows that he borrowed from Reuven, because although he was his renter, but he borrowed from him two times. Now, it was on this time that, in other words, we consider it as if two different cows died. The reason being is because it's not the same cow as if he borrowed the first time to say that he gave it back and that he borrowed it again, because to the contrary, it's not that one that he, it's not the same cow that is paying it up to say that it's the same cow that he's right now, to say that he shouldn't have to pay two times, because what happened is that it's two different collections that the renter is doing from him, because he lent them two different times because it was two different rentals. It's like it was two different cows. It wasn't the same one that he borrowed, gave it back, and then borrowed again. If it was that same one, then it would be the same cow. He'd only pay up one. But it's not that way, because when he then rented it back to him again, it was a new rental, so it was like a new cow. When he lent it back to him, it was like a different cow that he would be liable for. It's like two parallel stories, although it's the same cow. So he'd have to give him two cows for keeps, but he would also have to give him two cows because each time he borrowed it from him from that new rental, there was 10 days that he said, I'll give you the remaining 10 days. First time when there was he rented it from 100 days, then he borrowed from 90, he had to give him those 10. Then the second time back when he then made a new rental, as if it's a new story, for 80 days, he borrowed it back for 70 days, he has to give him 10 days from that, 10 days from that. So he has to give him two cows each to do a period of 10 days. As the Gemara says, that kol she'elu she'elu mechayv chod para. For every single borrower that he made, he has to give him a separate cow. Because again, it's not the same thing. Because it's a new rental. He borrowed it from him. All the gain is his, like he's the new owner. And he then makes a new rental. New rental. Now when you borrow again, it's a different cow that he borrowed, that he rented, that he's borrowing from the guy who rented from him, because that is a separate rental from the 90 days, from the 100 days, from the 80 days. And therefore, each she'elah requires paying up a new cow, and so to another two for the remaining 10 days in each one. This halacha Reb Zeira, Amli Reb Acham, and Divtul Rabbeinu, he asked, Mechti. Let's see. Chadaparhi. I don't understand. There's one cow. I love a afka, it's the one that goes in and it comes out. In other words, afka meschiris, va'ayla shila. This is the same cow that this guy rented to him, he takes it out of the rental, and he goes and he borrows it from him. Afka meshela, va'ayla schiris. Now he takes it out of the loan and makes it back into a rental. And therefore the question he's asking is, so then the same thing should be regarding payment. You should only have to pay him for one cow, and that should take the place of the one that, for the two borrowers, for the two loans that he took on the cow, that's one he should have to pay him for keeps, and one he should have to give him to do the 20 days. Why does he have to give him four cows? He should only have to give him two cows, because one is to pay him up, yes, he borrowed and it died in his possession, so he got to pay him one, and one to finish off the remaining 20 days. But why do you say four cows? He lent him, he rented him, he lent him, he rented him, but it's the same cow, went back and forth, so it should only be that one cow. That should be liability, which is the actual own, the cow which is dead, he has to pay him up. And moreover, so to the remaining time, which is 20 days from the two times they went back and forth, which was 10 days each. But why four? It should be only two cows. So on that, Omalei, Ravina said to Rav Acham Adifti, he says, Umi'is lapar be'ena, is the cow around? The name Alehacha that we should say this type of a logic? In other words, you're right. If the cow was still around, so then he would be totally exempt, because he would just give him back the cow, and he would just let him finish off the 20 days. But now that the cow died, so now we're coming from halachas of payment of a shoyl to a seicher regarding two different claims. When he borrowed, was like as if it was from two different renters, because it was two different rentals. This guy rented from the original guy once for 100 days, and that was for 100 days. And then this guy borrowed it from him. When he then rented again from him, it was like a new rental, a new thing. And then when he borrowed it back to him, it was like a different cow. Because this guy had rented it for 100 days and for 80 days, and he didn't get either one of them. He lent it out both times to the original owner. It's too different. And when they're dead, so now there's an onus of the shayl to the seicher from two different situations, and therefore he's chayv two cows permanently and two cows for separate shaylas, for each one being 10 days, which is for a total all of four cows. However, Mabar of Ashriyama, he says actually like the way Rav Acham Adifti held in his question. He disagrees. He holds, Ein lo yalein el shtei paras. It's not true. The original owner only has to pay to the renter two cows. Chadad sheila v'chadad schiras. One for the loan and one for the rental. Meaning one for permanence, which is for the loan that he had taken out, which a sheila schaiv and einsens, he has to pay him the cow. One just for the period of 20 days for the rental that he has still extant on the contract. Because he explains, Shum Sheila Achasi, the loan is considered one loan, the Shum Schiris Achasi, and the rental is considered one rental. Because since it was one cow, and it's only because that the renter lent it to him, that's why it came into two loans at two different times. But it's one cow, so therefore it's going to be only one. He disagrees with that principle. Now, and he explains, because the She'ela Kani Lagamri, meaning he explains what the halacha is, meaning that when we say the one of the loan, that's totally acquired to the renter because he owes him that. And this one of the schiris, avad ba yimei schirusa, so the one for the rental, meaning that's the one that he gives him for the remaining time of the contract, of the rental of 20 days, and then the mahadur le'lamara, then it goes back to the owner. That's this machlikas we have in this case, based on the halacha of our Mishnah, which was interesting in the opinion of the Rabbanon, that the seicher could actually come out on top. That's where Reb Zeira said it could even come out that the owner would have to even pay the renter if he ends up borrowing from him, as we described the case, four cows, and that's what the machlikas is, that there is another opinion. Mamre Avashi holds that no, yes, he will have to pay him. The owner will have to pay the one who rented from him, but not four cows, but rather two cows. Again, the one who holds four is two for the she'ila, that permanent, and two for the rental. And the other opinion holds that no, only two, one for the permanent and one for the rental.